Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where we give you, the investor, an inside view on some of the best and brightest small cap companies operating on the public markets today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Today I'm talking to Martin Cronin, CEO, President, and Director of Patriot One, which trades under the symbol PAT on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Patriot One is a tech company that has developed cognitive microwave radar, which detects concealed weapons. When investors talk about technology companies, they often like to ask, what problem is this solving? Well, here's the problem. There are more than 390 million guns in the US. Every year, about 35,000 people are killed and 120,000 are maimed by gunfire. In 2018, Amnesty International stated that gun violence in the US is a human rights crisis. Today we're going to find out what Patriot One can do about that problem. Martin Cronin, welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Martin, can you start by giving us a view from the mountaintop of Patriot One?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So, as you mentioned in the introduction, we were set up to commercialize a technology called cognitive microwave radar. This was research which was undertaken at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, with 7 years of funding from the Canadian federal government, from NATO. And this is a technology to detect concealed weapons. So, in other words, when somebody's carrying a gun or a knife or a bomb, into a public space or a facility, that could be detected and an alert generated to the threat to be dealt with before an attack happens. Now, since that inception, we've been broadening our technology focus. We're about public safety through threat detection rather than one single technology, and we've been embracing some of the best innovations in the space through acquisitions and licensing and partnerships to now offer what we call a multi-sensor threat detection platform, because we don't believe that there's one single silver bullet that fixes all problems, but we want to make sure that we have solutions whatever the environment. And so the problem that this is fixing, as you mentioned, is the epidemic of violence, not just in the US, but globally, from acts of terror and from violent actions committed by disturbed individuals.
Martin, before we get into the hardware and the software and where you are in the development cycle, I'd like to learn a little bit more about you, because you have an absolutely fascinating resume.
Sure. So I spent 21 years with the British government, with the Foreign Office. Much of that time was spent in the Middle East and South Asia in conflict environments, working in counterterrorism and security policy, among other things. That gave me a very good first-hand look at the threat posed by terrorism and the challenges of providing security to the public in violent environments. So when Patriot One was founded, the founders of the company approached me and asked if I would take a look at the technology to assess, where the application might be and to bring a network of contacts to bear on exploring the market opportunity. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Martin, who do you see as the end users of your product?
Well, that's a question with one level, a very simple answer, which is everybody. But if I can explain what I mean by that, the approach that we take to public safety is to develop systems which are low cost, can be widely deployed in a strategic way, which allow the public to go about their business unimpeded and provide security professionals with early warning of threats. And in terms of where those criteria would apply, it's really anywhere where the public gather and may be at risk of acts of violence. And so that's, tourism, hospitality industry, mass transportation, the retail sector, government buildings, prisons, hospitals, airports. It really is a very, very broad application environment. And so for that reason, when people say, what's the size of the addressable market, I really hesitate to ever offer a number, because we do intend that these technologies can be ubiquitous.
So basically any location, whether it's a stadium, a church, or a prison, where you have a need to know who's carrying weapons.
Exactly. And you can really, your mind can go to any number of places with those criteria.
Do you, Martin, this is, I guess it's a philosophical question, but I am interested in your take.
As a Canadian, I honestly don't understand Americans' relationship to their weapons. Do you?
Well, I think I have some understanding of it. I mean, obviously, that attachment to weapons is unfamiliar to many people outside of the U.S. But, I have, a great number of American friends and colleagues, who I highly respect, who, are very attached to their weapons. It's a very challenging issue in the U.S. And I have to say, it's generally, I think, unhelpful for me as a foreigner to offer a view on what Americans should or shouldn't do about gun rights. Where we focus in is saying, well, look, there are lots of places where guns don't belong. Whether or not they belong in private homes, they don't belong in schools, in hospitals, and other places like that. And so what we provide are tools for security professionals to control their own facilities and to keep patrons and the public safe. And really, as I say, that's the most helpful thing we can do rather than be drawn into the gun rights debate.
So for our investors who are not familiar with Patriot One, your core technology involves embedding sensors in wall cavities or hiding them in some way. And they detect weapons,
yep.
And
yep.
They are synced up with a software database that is loaded up with every single weapon ever manufactured.
Sorry, just a distinction there. What it is, the machine learning engine has classifiers, so it's been taught to recognize the signatures of different classes of weapons. And then what the algorithms in effect say is, well, what percentage of data points does this signature have in common with my classifier for a long-barreled weapon, a handgun, et cetera? So, in fact, it doesn't need to have seen every type of weapon because, in the end, one 9mm semi-automatic pistol looks very much like another. It's more, does it cross the threshold of being sufficiently similar to the classifier to provide that level of alert? And so, obviously, the more weapons it's seen, the better. Obviously, when you're dealing with AI, the bigger the data set, the better the performance. But it's not actually necessary to have seen every type of weapon. So if it does see something that it hasn't seen before, providing it's sufficiently similar to the classifier, it will still generate an alert.
That's clear. How important is the covert aspect of it? If, say, I'm a hotel owner and I want to know who is carrying weapons inside my hotel, but I don't want to throw it in people's faces?
Yes. I think there's a couple of aspects to it, and you're absolutely right when you say, these hotel managers don't want to throw this detection in people's faces. There's the aspect of identifying a potential threat before anything happens, which is critical for prevention of loss of life, that you're not responding once somebody has pulled a gun out and started shooting, but you can actually start to manage the incident prior to that point by knowing that a weapon is present. But secondly, particularly when it comes to hotels and resorts, they want to preserve the ambience of these places. And if people are subjected to, metal detector arches, pat-downs, wand searches, x-ray searches, it very quickly starts to stop feeling like a relaxing luxury property. And that's the quandary for, not just hotels and resorts, but many environments. How do we enhance safety while not changing the ambience? And certainly that's true of places like Las Vegas. And so the ability to provide enhanced security in an invisible way, which doesn't inconvenience your patrons and members of the public, that's really critical. And so it's not just about being covert, but it's about being unobtrusive and not, in your face. And those things put together, I think, are a powerful formula.
Yes, I think the word ambience is very important there because, for instance, in educational institutions, where they would want to know if there are students or non-students carrying weapons.
Absolutely, and also in schools. I was in Washington, D.C. yesterday with congressional officers talking about school safety. And, children, there's a lot of evidence that children feel quite afraid and insecure when they have to go through very overt security measures. But at the same time, educators in the US are wrestling with the issue of how to stop the epidemic of school shootings. And so if, again, you can provide enhanced security, but in a way which, you know, is not scary for children, then so much the better.
Yeah, I see that as so important. I mean, just the idea of, like, frisking an 8-year-old, that's just miserable. You know, as they go into school, that's just miserable.
These are learning environments. You know, they're not open prisons. They're not fortresses. And so it's important to be able to keep that sense of purpose. And that's where I think we can really help.
You know, I spend a lot of time in China, Martin, partly because I have a Chinese wife and partly because I work there sometimes. I often meet upper middle class people who have sent their children to be educated in Australia. And when I ask them why Australia, not the US, they always say the same thing, gun violence. And we could grind the numbers and argue whether they need to be afraid of that, but the fact is they are. And I see that as another very good selling tool for a university to be able to say to potential international students, yeah, we have a no weapon policy and we have the technology to enforce that.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question. I mean, as you say, you can grind the statistics, but school shootings are an absolute top of mind issue right across the US, and people are desperate for solutions. And institutions want to be able to demonstrate that they can keep people safe under their care. And so I think that is a very powerful, attraction for our technology. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't try and force one single solution into every environment. So we have a number of tools in the box. And so, for example, we've recently been demonstrating our video recognition software.
Yes.
So this is a solution to leverage existing camera infrastructure. And when a weapon appears, the algorithms will identify that in the frame and generate an alert and send that alert wherever you need it sent. And that's a solution that a lot of academic institutions we're talking to are really interested in because, as I say, it leverages, you know, existing infrastructure. So, you know, for us, it's, of course, we're in business to make money. We're in business to make a profit. And obviously, the education sector is a key market. But, you know, we're not so cynical as to say, well, you know, this is all about money. I mean, the idea that we could, you know, save children's lives through the application of this technology is a huge motivational factor. So, you know, I do think that we will really make a difference here.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
Have you marketed your stock to ethical funds at all?
Not directly, and that's a very good. It's a very good question. I was, at an Institute of Corporate Directors seminar last week, and we had some discussion around ethical funds, and it did get me thinking that that there is some more direct activity we might be able to do in that space, and with teachers' pension funds as well, for example.
I would think so. Martin, you mentioned you were in Washington yesterday in congressional offices. What were those conversations?
Well, absolutely about school safety. We were bringing particularly some of the new figures in the House, bringing their staff up to speed with what we're doing to make a request that when it comes to funding bills for school safety, that they should be technology agnostic. So rather than saying, here's money for metal detectors or guns for teachers or whatever else, simply to say, here's money for school safety, and then letting the school boards decide what's appropriate, because we're in discussion with quite a number of school boards and academic institutions, and if they can tap some of these grant funding that's coming through, then so much the better. And we were bringing, representatives just up to speed with things that we are doing in their area, so that we can invite them to come and see technology, firsthand and really understand what it is that we do.
Martin, who do you have on your team to help with political liaising?
Obviously, I do quite a lot of that myself, because that is, my background and I suppose a key part of my skill set. We have a public policy consultant in Washington who knows who knows Congress inside out. We have a number of former senior British, Canadian, and U.S. Government, military, law enforcement people who all have their networks. I mean, one thing I think I can safely say about Patriot One is that we do have tremendous access to security decision makers and political decision makers, not just in North America and the UK, but globally.
What is, I see you have on your board of advisors, Tom Ridge. Can you tell me a bit about him?
Yeah, I mean, he's been just a tremendous supporter and advocate. I mean, for him, of course, there's a very personal mission to this. He's very focused on public safety, having been former Homeland Security Secretary. He's immensely well respected in Washington and beyond, extremely well connected, works away quietly without grandstanding, and is just a tremendous tremendous point of sound advice for us and advocacy. And we couldn't be happier with the opportunity to work with Governor Ridge.
Yeah, I've seen him speak. He's very, very good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about, it seems to me, and perhaps I've misread it, that you are also have in your development pipeline essentially a homeowner's version of your technology. Am I correct?
Well, in a sense, that doesn't necessarily need to be a wholly separate product. It's really about, we're looking at some of the housings, how the core technology gets deployed. We've been doing a lot of work recently around very aesthetically pleasing planter box designs, which can house the antennas, be very discreet, can look nice, don't cause any sense of a fortress-like appearance. Now that can be an application that could appeal to homeowners. So it's not so much about necessarily a wholly separate iteration of the technology, but more about how it gets housed and deployed in any given environment.
Sure. Where, let's talk about your, as it were, lab to marketplace.
Yes.
Obviously, the end goal is to have robust financials and go, this thing's kicking ass, we have a factory, we're making a ton of them, here's our revenues.
Yep.
And I believe you're getting close to that time. Can we talk about that?
Sure. I mean, we're very well capitalized. We have a very, very strong treasury, in the region of $70 million. Plus, we've got there's a lot of warrants out there. So we have a very strong cash position to see us through to profitability. Now, where we're at is we are now out in pilot installations with our technologies with some of our key reference clients and partners, so that we can refine, get things right, make sure that before we go out more widely, that we have things which are truly robust, that work in all environments. And what we don't want to do is rush out there, have failures, and then have a major crisis of confidence in the technology. We'd rather, take advantage of the fact that we have a very strong treasury, that we have a huge number of clients waiting patiently, that we have hugely important corporate partnerships with the likes of Cisco, Raytheon, that we have distributors lined up around the world. So the market is there. We just want to make sure that we can meet it with a truly robust and successful offering so that we don't rush out and then have to do a product recall. The sort that we're seeing with a number of much larger companies, and that can be something of a crisis. So we want to make sure we get it right. So it's less about flicking a switch one day and saying, okay, away we go, order online. Here's the details. It's more about this gradual rollout into more and more key facilities, working with key partners who then in turn can take the solutions to a much wider audience. So, you know, I know that some of our investors, are frustrated at how slow that seems. And believe me, if we could safely go faster, we absolutely would. But key priority is to get it right. You know, we've got great sustainability in the company. We have tremendous market opportunity. We will get it right. And then, you know, that will deliver real shareholder value.
My impression is that the investors aren't frustrated, that they understand this process cannot be rushed. I mean, Patriot One technology is not an app to sell cannabis that can be thrown out in a beta version and tweaked as we go.
Exactly. It's life safety equipment, and at all costs, we must avoid a situation where, you know, equipment is seen or perceived to have failed and led to a loss of life. And so part of it is not just around the technology itself, making sure it's robust, but also picking early adopters to work with who understand the security environment, who can put in place appropriate protocols. Because, you know, technology on its own is one thing. If it's not properly implemented, you know, it can create severe problems. And so as this technology is rolled out, we want to make sure it's rolled out into a security environment which understands how to use it to its full potential, and in that way to mitigate any risk of a failure that leads to loss of life, which would be very, very damaging, or could be very damaging.
Tell me about the explosive detection angle. I'm interested in that, and I don't know a lot.
Yes, so we announced a short while back, a joint venture called SOTEC, with a spin-out from the University of Texas in Dallas. Dr. Shalini Prasad in the nanobiotech lab there has been working on detection of volatile organic compounds with a technology called multiplane splicing, which is essentially capturing the target molecules from the air and generating an alert on the presence of that particular molecule that you're looking for. So the primary initial focus of development there is around different classes of explosive, to be able to detect them at standoff for, car bombs, suicide vests, etc. But also to work on opioid detection, particularly fentanyl, which again is, a major crisis, an epidemic in the U.S. and beyond. So it's a very, very interesting, a technology with enormous potential application. Again, we want to make sure we get it right. We've got very good, demonstrations have been conducted, so people can see that, the technology is sound. Now it's about turning that into, a robust product offering, which again can make a huge difference in public safety.
Yeah, and you don't have to pay for dog food.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, indeed. I mean, in a sense, it's an electronic dog with greater standoff capability.
Mm. It seems to me the end user for the explosives technology would be a subset of the weapons technology. Would it be more military?
Well, both, I think. Certainly, a number of years ago, you might have said, well, the primary application would be the military, and, you'd have one or two markets where it would be more applicable in the public space, like the UK as it was battling the IRA threat. But now that we've seen the widespread, scourge of suicide bombers in, metropolitan areas right across the world, technology that was once really seen as, preserved of the military, is now very much in demand in the public space as well. So I think it is both of those things. There are some slightly different approaches we can take. I mean, certainly for, explosive detection, there's obvious application in standoff detection at checkpoints in military operations overseas, but equally, stadiums and event centres in the US, in the UK, Canada, are very interested in how they can prevent the threat from suicide bombers.
Yes. Do you see this as a global product?
Absolutely. There's no question. I mean, from the inception of the company, as soon as we went out and began, telling our story and letting people know what we're up to, inquiries have come in literally from all over the world, from, you know, as far away as, you know, Mongolia. People have said, hey, we need your technology. So there is no question that this is, you know, there is a global appetite. We've appointed distributors in 12 countries. Our major, you know, major blue chip corporate partners, of course, have huge global presence. And there is no question this is seen as absolutely a global offering.
Mm. You don't have to name them, but competitors, who's nipping at your heels?
Well, I think, you know, a number of them, you know, are fairly well known in the space. I mean, Evolve have been out there for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, great company with, you know, advanced security screening technology, but you know their approach is more in sort of fixed security screening, you know, checkpoints, whereas ours is for a slightly different application of more broadly distributed, you know, covert deployment. Kinetic in the UK has some millimeter wavelength detection. There's RapidScan. There are the traditional providers of airport security systems, and you know, in when you look at that, we see what we do as supplementary to those security screening points in airports. I don't think that they are ever going to go away. But where we come in is by providing the ability to put an outer cordon around the airport to detect the approach of a weapon. Because after all, if you look at something like, you know, the Brussels airport attack, those terrorists weren't intending to get through the security screening area. They were simply wanting to go into the airport and cause carnage. And so I think what we offer is very much supplementary to what those traditional providers of fixed security screening offer. There are, you know, other people popping up. I mean, Liberty have launched recently. You know, it's no surprise that others are coming into the space. I think what we have is,
of course,
a number of years of very strong R&D having already been undertaken, very, very strong market access, a very robust treasury.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, I'm certainly not going to run anybody down. If people are in the business of improving public safety and bringing forward solutions that can help, you know, I have no issue with that at all. I wish them well. But I think that we are in a fairly unique position in terms of our philosophical approach, in terms of, you know, covert, unobtrusive, widespread, low-cost detection, a multi-technology platform approach, coupled with our, you know, our very well capitalized position and our access to security decision makers globally. I think that puts us in a really very, very strong position.
Martin, thank you so much for your time. I do have one last question. What milestones can investors look forward to over the next 12 months?
Well, I would like to see us deployed with well-known, well-understood clients, not just in North America, but internationally, to demonstrate that the technology, that people want it, they're prepared to pay for it, they're buying it and using it, that it's not niche, that it's multi-sector, that it has global application, and that we're working, doing installations with some of the bigger security integrators in the world. And then I think people will see that everything else is just about scaling. You know, if I fell under a bus, you know, investors probably needn't bat an eyelid. They'd know that the company is on a safe and secure track for global success. So I think that's the milestone to look out for in the next 12 months.
I love your technology. I love this company. I really love the way you don't chase ambulances.
Yep.
You know, when there is a mass shooting,
you don't... I think that's really important. You know, it doesn't help the families of victims one bit to have people saying, oh, we could have stopped that,
and somehow
attaching blame to the security professionals. It doesn't help one bit.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed talking to you. Thanks very much.
Likewise. Bye-bye.
That concludes another episode of Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. Thanks for listening. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.